bow down to a racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation. I'm gonna
and a new. Hello, hello, hello. This is Faith McKinney with Beyond Talk with Faith McKinney, and we are back with a new season and a new co-host. Now we're Beyond Talk with Faith McKinney and Jason Moore, our brand new co-host. So we're hitting the ground doing with special guests, Deidre Ramsey McIntyre, founding admin of Facebook group Black People and Cryptocurrency. And we'll talk about her in just a moment. I want to thank our producer, Jacqueline Taylor Adams, for that wonderful intro, Freedom, from the Panther the Movie soundtrack. I'm so excited to be here, everybody. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for all of your encouragement. Everything that we're getting from you, we want to make sure we give back. The tech community, the Black tech community, we want to make sure we serve and inform everyone about what's really going on in Black technology. Do I have Jason Moore on the line?
Yes, I'm here. So,
hey, Jason, how are you? Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited that you are now the co-host of Beyond Talk. What's going on?
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm just holding down the fort, as they say, busy doing different things and, keep pressing forward, basically.
All right. Well, this is, you know, part of you and Jacqueline Taylor Adams, your brainchild, this Beyond Talk. This is a fabulous platform for everyone, Black America, to understand what's going on with Blacks in technology. So I want to thank you personally for allowing me to be a part of this amazing organization. And I know that so many people are being helped by your work. So thank you so much. We are so thrilled to have you as our new co-host. And today, Tuesday, is our the only day we'll be on Tuesday. Starting next month, starting in November, we'll be on the second Wednesday of every month. So this is just an anomaly here, but starting November, we'll be on at, I believe it's 8 o'clock on the second Wednesday of every month. So look out for Beyond Talk. Kenny and Jason Moore now. How about that, Jason?
Excellent. I am very excited and looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. All right. So I want to get our guest on. We have a fantastic guest, Deidre Ramsey McIntyre. As I mentioned earlier, she's the founding admin of the Facebook group Black People and Cryptocurrency. After being a featured speaker at the 2018 Black Blockchain Summit in Washington, D.C., Deidre is giving us an international clarion call to invest in ourselves, invest brain power, time, and resources in the Black blockchain. So today you're going to tune in to learn and stay tuned to learn how and discover the power of the Black blockchain. And there's more about Deidre. Deidre launched Black People and Cryptocurrency in September of 2017 as a place for members to exchange knowledge, participate in live stream events, and network. For more than 25 years, she has merged communications and technology skills to produce, publish, and teach with digital media realm. Deidre has also served as a production manager for theglobe.com, a once popular New York City-based social media platform in the late 1990s and early 2000s. She's editor for various New York publications and public school teacher to Brooklyn High School students. McIntyre also maintains a Quora presence focused on African-centric responses to Kemet, which is ancient Egypt, queries, and is an admin moderator of several African and Kemet Kush Facebook groups and pages. She owned her own digital media publishing company, Red Ibis, and also works for her brother's New York, New Jersey-based water filtration business, Aqua Right. Connect with Deidre at www on Facebook with Black People Cryptocurrency. That's Facebook Black People Cryptocurrency. All right. We are called to do with Faith McKinney. I'm a personal brand and media strategist along with author Jason Moore, who's the founder of Black Economic and Entrepreneurship Development Conference and Expo. And we're going to, as I mentioned earlier, we're airing live every second Wednesday as the official audio podcast of the BEEDC. And with that, I want to welcome our guest, Ms. Deidra Ramsey McIntyre. How are you tonight?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you so much for joining us. Jason and I tonight on Beyond Talk. Thank you.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Awesome. Thank you, Faith and Jason. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, Deidra, now Jason, feel free to jump in at any time. Deidra, you are such a wealth of information, and I want to make sure that our audience gets as much information from you as they can. Please give us a little bit. I know I read your bio a little bit earlier. If there's anything that I missed, please feel free to fill it in. But I want to get your input as far as why the blockchain is so important in the African American community, and let's start off with that.
Well, I think you pretty much covered everything in a nutshell, other than the fact that I'm a native New Yorker who now lives in New Jersey. My original vocation was as a print journalist. I have a bachelor's degree in print journalism from West Virginia University. And then later on, I would go on and get my master's in education in around 2006. And I taught in New York City for about 4 years. So the merger of my skills has been a kind of a combination from traditional media into digital media, considering that I worked at a .com for a period of time. And then it's because of that I kind of, by way of a client request, I discovered both Bitcoin, the blockchain, and cryptocurrencies in general. And I think there's a tremendous amount of confusion of what's going on. I think most people are familiar with the term Bitcoin. They're also familiar with perhaps a lot of negative media attention towards that. If you were probably to throw out the term Bitcoin to people who are not knowledgeable about the sector, some of the things that come to mind would probably be hacking, losing lots of money, Ponzi schemes, all sorts of negative things, because unfortunately that's what the Bleed It Leads coverage has been of the sector. But in terms of what people should know about blockchain, they need to understand that this is basically it's a different type of internet. And this analogy isn't mine. This analogy actually came from the Black Blockchain Summit that was in Washington, D.C. at Howard University a few weeks ago in September, produced by Sinclair Skinner, Bitmari, and his co-founder, Chris, as well as several others from the Kenyan Blockchain Association. And it was an international conference with attendees from Kenya, from Botswana, from Nigeria, from Uganda, from the United States, from Trinidad and Tobago, from Haiti, all of us on Howard's campus. And one of the keynote address speakers was Blockchain Association chairman out of Uganda. His first name is Kwame. And Kwame had basically said, put a charge to all those of us in the audience to kind of explain blockchain and cryptocurrency in a very simple fashion by comparing it to the internet. So if you understand that the internet is a network of computers that shares data. So by data, what do we mean? We mean text, we mean images, we mean video, we mean audio, such as what we're doing now. And all this data that exchanges back and forth, you could have multiple copies of it. So if I were to email Jason, you know, a photograph of my logo or something like that, I don't lose that logo. In fact, I can send it to Faith, I can send it to Jason, I can send it to 100 different people, and I still retain my logo. Now, that's how the World Wide Web and internet and all the email, all the components of the internet were set up, transfer of data that you can have multiple copies of and make multiple copies of. Well, that doesn't work in the finance sector. you don't want somebody to say, you know, hey, Jason, I got like $1 in my account, but I'll send it to you. And then on the side, I'm saying, Faith, I'm going to send you a dollar. And I'm going to send 100 people a dollar, but I don't really have $100. I just have $1, but I made a bunch of copies of it, so it's okay. That doesn't work in the finance sector. So the finance sector needed to create its own internet. And that's essentially what blockchain is. It's internet of value. And being that it's an internet of value, it has to be a transmission vehicle of a network of computers that can send, it can verify that something, someone has in possession some item, some token, some coin, some bit of data. And then once they send it, they don't have it anymore. Or if they sent a percent of it, a portion of it, then if they sent 50% of that data, then they only have 50% of it. And because that's how money works. If I have a dollar and I give a dollar away, I don't have a dollar anymore. So the bare basics of blockchain and why it's so significant, it was able to create something in which you can transfer value. It can verify whether someone has no value, lots of value, and that they've actually intended to send that value to someone else and any longer have that. So the implications for blockchain is that not only can it be used for sending a digital currency without the need of a bank or PayPal or any other Western Union or any other intermediary, because that's what you have when you have online banking, and that's what people get confused. The reason why you have PayPal that sits as an intermediary is because PayPal has to verify that you didn't copy the data that you're sending. They're verifying that you have actually sent it over the internet, and they're verifying that it no longer exists in your account and exists in someone else's account. Same thing with an online bank. Same thing if you're doing something with one of the other money wire transfers. However, with blockchain, it removes the need for the intermediary because the computerized system itself actually verifies it. So it removes the middle person that's involved with that. And so two people can transact whatever the agreed upon value is, and you don't need the verifier. The network itself, the network of computers themselves are the verifiers and are the processing power that actually sends the data. So the implications of what blockchain can be used for is not just in sending monetary value, but also in voting. In fact, the nation of Sierra Leone became the first country in the world in March to use a blockchain for election purposes. It wasn't the company wasn't necessarily an African blockchain developer, but a company that came in and Sierra Leone was willing to be its case study for that, and they had about 70% of their voting component done by blockchain. And what that means is no more waiting for results. It's immediate. As soon as the thing is cast, you can see, oh, this is how many votes there are. There are no humans that need to be tallying or determining if there was a hanging chad or the polls were closed or whatever. It's all done by computers. So the case study has already been done. It's already been done in an African nation. So we can expect to see a lot more of that type of thing in addition to the actual people creating different types of digital currencies to make transactions a lot faster.
That is excellent. Fascinating. Go ahead, Jason.
Excellent, Deidre, and thank you for that intro. I have a quick question. What is it about blockchain that is often most misunderstood?
I think that one of the things that's misunderstood is that somehow or another, cryptocurrency is not an important component, or that cryptocurrency is somehow separate from blockchain. When the Bitcoin white paper was written, and Bitcoin is the first blockchain cryptocurrency, when it was written was pretty much not necessarily the first time a blockchain was mentioned, because it did exist previously. There's a British company that had a project management system that used a blockchain. I'm not sure if they called it that, but essentially it was the same functionality. So
the blockchain is just the ledger when you say blockchain. Is that correct?
Well, blockchain is actually the process of the computers actually sending the data in a kind of like a chain link fashion. And so it's part, a component of it is the ledger, a bunch of computers that keep basically keep the record keeping of who, what address sent what to whom. But there's also other aspects of it with other computers that are actually managing and fighting for to do the transaction. So it's kind of a networked system. But, you know, a lot of times people are trying to boohoo the development of the actual currencies that are being created. And they're trying to say that, oh, well, the blockchain is important. The blockchain is important, but Bitcoin is bad. And you really can't do that. It's kind of like, you know, separating blood and bones. What created this whole cryptographic currency had everything to do with blockchain being defined within that white paper on how it functions. So any of the cryptocurrencies that came after it, they either improved upon the functionality of the blockchain or they created something analogous to the blockchain. But it was the blockchain that pretty much said, hey, you can send something of value across with all computer management, and you don't have to worry about the necessity of human involvement in those types of transfers.
Excellent.
I think one of the things that fascinated me was the use of the creation of what we were talking about, currency. You know, how do people create currency from essentially nothing? When you know, how do you get currency through the blockchain?
Are you talking about actually having a cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin or Litecoin or Ether, or or you're talking about how is the cryptocurrency itself valuable?
Well, a little bit of both. How is it valuable, and then how does one go about creating it? So, you know, outside of the blockchain, you know, you work, you earn money, but with the blockchain, how do you actually get that currency?
Okay, so let's tackle the one issue first. If you were inquiring about how to obtain Bitcoin, we'll use Bitcoin as an example since it's the most popular one, but people should note there is at least nearly 2,000, if not more than 2,000 types of cryptocurrency. Most of them are not necessarily valuable. They're not valuable because people aren't using them. That's the only reason they're really not valuable. But so we'll use Bitcoin as an example, although we could have used Dash, Litecoin, Monero, anything. If I were a person that was interested in being a part, adding my computer to the network that makes blockchain work for Bitcoin, there are ways, a certain type of computer I can add that because of my computer processing power in the network, I earn Bitcoin for the work that the computer is doing. Those machines are generally called mining machines. They're the ones that handle any transactions that are going on in the network. Do they always get cryptocurrency? No, because they don't always handle all the transactions. So, but when they do finally get a handle of a transaction, because they're competing with other computers in the system, a part of the payment is part of the transaction fees that one has to pay when they're transferring money from one person to another or from one wallet to another. So that is one way of getting quote-unquote free Bitcoin. It's not really free Bitcoin because you're lending your electricity and your computer to the network. But that's the original way that a lot of people, how they built the network in the first place. People, the white paper was out, and they explained the necessity of all the different computers and their functions. There will be one level computers that actually are added based on a kind of like honor system. They're the record keepers, the nodes that actually store the ledger. They don't necessarily get paid. And then the other component was the ones that were actually doing all the work and verifying and securing and ordering all the transactions. Those were the mining machines. And that part of their payment is when they did score a transaction was that they would get the transaction fee. So that's one way. And because that was the original way in which a lot of the cryptocurrency was dispersed, and in the early days, because no one was in it, they were getting a lot of it. the people that held the bulk of the Bitcoin eventually wanted to sell as the value of it rose, because the more people who use the network and have a demand, just like you have a demand for anything, you have a demand for hot sneakers and hot jeans and hot t-shirts, and you know, those things have value because of the demand, and cryptocurrency is no different. Then they started setting up marketplaces, which in America we call exchanges, in which sellers could say, hey, I'm offering this amount of Bitcoin at this price. And of course, the price would go up as the demand, people were willing to pay for it. So most people, most common people today, their entry point is not necessarily putting their computer to work for the system in terms of mining. It's the simple route. It's going to exchanges such as Coinbase and Bitfinex and Genesis. And there's a number of them that people can go to and actually verifying their identity through Know Your Customer laws. So it may take a while. It's not instantaneous. It may take a while to get verified, but you got to provide everything except for a blood sample. And then once you're verified, you can use your credit card to buy from one of those original miners or, you know, early buyers of Bitcoin who are willing to sell. And you put in your order for the coin and you wait and see if, you know, if it's accepted. And then you have some of the currency yourself. And then if you're wise about how you now, because now you're a banker, you have to manage your own in your own purchases. Once you have made the purchase on the marketplace or the exchange, you should transfer it off to your own personal wallet. And your own personal wallet is basically just some software that you can get, and you can either choose to keep some as software on your mobile phone or on a web-based wallet, or as a download of an application wallet, or even on a jump drive, or even use the two keys that compose your wallet and print it out on a hard copy of paper and put it in a safe. So there's a whole bunch of different types of wallets that you can use to store and save your personal funds that you have acquired by however you acquired it, whether a friend sent it to you, you went to a marketplace slash exchange and bought it, or you're a machine that was a miner and you quote unquote earned it. But once you have it, you have a multiple way, different ways that you can decide in which you're going to store it, the best way you can store it, until you're willing to do something with it, either sell it yourself or to use it to buy something.
Did you have a question?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Now, with the mining, can you tell us a little bit more about what the current hash rate, how that figures into what you would get if you tried to run it under like a regular machine versus like an ASIC type machine?
Yeah, I really have no idea, because I have never mined in my life. But what I can tell you is that one of the controversies of Bitcoin is that the ASIC computers basically have a faster processing power. So they're expensive computers. So people are trying to buy those to use those computers because they're more than likely will hit a transaction than somebody using their Mac or their PC or their Raspberry Pi, because any type of computing processing power can serve as a miner. But, you know, when you have people who realize that faster computers attain transactions a lot faster, and then, you know, people of means set up basically, you know, factories with hundreds and hundreds of these computers, these ASIC computers, they have an unfair advantage to create a block on ownership of attaining the Bitcoin that was slowly leaked out by way the way the network, the way it was set up. So a part of the controversy is that Bitcoin has become centralized because those of more financial means who were able to buy hundreds of these ASIC computers, whether they're in China or a part of even the American traditional finance sector who entered into the fray, they basically have a monopoly on the ownership of the Bitcoin that's out there. So the objective of Bitcoin was to really create a currency that was decentralized that a conglomerate could not necessarily control, and there have a more equitable, financial situation. But what has happened is because of the uneven playing field of the computers that involved, you actually have, you know, a smaller group centralizing or having the potential to centralize and then control the market on, you know, the coin. But there, like I said, there are other cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is also trying to address it. Also, they're trying to introduce something called the Lightning Network, which would essentially, it's pretty much a copy of what was previously done by Dash. Dash is a cryptocurrency that has more than one way for you to enter a computer as a money earning component. They have a set of computers known as masternodes that work in conjunction with miners. And so Bitcoin is kind of taking a cue from that. They're not exactly copying Dash, but it's something similar in which you have these pre-funded machines that actually will expedite and potentially privatize transactions between wallets. So you have that factor there. There. When you are a miner, you have voting power. So a part of the adding your computers to the system is the voting power on decisions on those who are making changes to the code. This kind of majority rules to change certain things. So, you know, blockchain, Bitcoin, even though it doesn't have a CEO, it doesn't have a marketing rep, it does have development groups. And when these votes happen, it marks changes in how it functions. So it's a living, breathing, dynamic cryptocurrency that does not have to be the same as, and has not been the same as exactly how it was produced in the original white paper. So you have the potential of change happening in which it would be better for people actually using Bitcoin in the future.
Go ahead, Jason. You got the best questions. I love this.
Okay. Well, my next question is, are you aware of any, like, speaking of, like, the ASIC miners and the, I guess, the prevalence of all those machines, are you aware of some of the ASIC-resistant mining coins out there?
Yeah, some of them. I'm pretty sure that I have to review the information, but I'm pretty sure that Dash did not allow for ASIC mining. I'm not sure about Litecoin. I can't remember the specifics, but the reason why you have the other true coins that forked away from Bitcoin and started modifying is you had disagreements on the direction that Bitcoin was going. So a lot of the original core developers of Bitcoin are also involved in the competition of Bitcoin, be it Litecoin or be it the ultra-private, often-hacked Monero, which, you know, is exclusively a privacy coin, or Dash, which is a hybrid coin that you can have private sends as well as somewhat pseudonymous sends like Bitcoin, which can be partially tracked. So you have all these things in which people who have come out with alternative coins because they realize some unforeseeable things that have occurred with Bitcoin. And part of it is that ASIC dominance of unfair advantage of people who have those computers that are mining versus the ones who don't have those computers that are mining. So I always forget kind of like the specifics of every nuance of every single different coin. A lot of times what I'm looking at is, you know, how fast it is, if people are looking to roll it out in terms of merchant services or access by way of ATMs, because I neglected to mention that you can look for a Bitcoin ATM locator by just searching Google, you know, where's a Bitcoin ATM near me, and it will roll out to ATM Coin Radar,
website to show you where you can not only buy Bitcoin, but you can buy Litecoin directly a lot of times. Sometimes you can buy Dash directly. Depends on what the machines are offering. So ATMs are also a way in which you can buy the cryptocurrency. And then with those, you also have to, they may ask you to scan your license because there's still KYC laws that impact that as well. But it is another way of getting, you get a wallet independently on your own. And then with any wallet that you have, you get a QR code that you can add funds and send funds using the QR code. So when you go to the local ATM, you know, they'll ask you to hold up the QR code and scan it, and that's how it gets in your wallet, but you're just putting cash into a machine just like you would any other bank ATM. So that's just another way to also, in lieu of using exchanges. In fact, that's the way that I did it. The first time I did it that way. So.
Oh, yes. I actually have used a Bitcoin ATM. It was a very interesting way of you know, getting some of the cash, some of the fiat cash out of the Bitcoin that I needed at the time.
Exactly.
Another quick question I have is, you know, how can like the layman, like the person who doesn't have much experience with Bitcoin or blockchain get involved with blockchain technology and just get immersed in the ecosystem?
I think a key way is just to do a lot of reading. One of the reasons we launched Black People in Cryptocurrency is because we were able to I was actually writing a research paper in 2016 for someone who was being proposed a Bitcoin business opportunity to, and he worked in the traditional finance sector, and he was like, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what's going on. So can you write something in plain English? And so I did that, and that was actually my formal introduction to Bitcoin and block. I had to do the research, find to figure out myself, and then, you know, figure out a way to actually put it in a simple way for him to understand it. And after I wrote that, you know, a year later, that same document became the basis of me writing a user guide, so to speak, in plain English to accessing the Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So in our group, in our file section, we actually have a guidebook. But there are other people that have guidebooks. You know, I don't recommend people at this juncture, because we're still in the early stage, buying and paying for certifications, especially if they're new. If you're new, you just need to search and YouTube videos. What is blockchain? Find a TED Talk on blockchain. TED Talks are always very down to earth in terms of their explanation, and get a grasp of what it is and how you can become involved, and then make a decision if that's a direction that you want to go into. But at this point, a lot of the, you know, even if people want to be developers, a lot of this stuff, because there's such a shortage, is free. It's definitely back to the early days of the .com era. I know when I started in the .com era, I really didn't pay for anything. Everything that I needed, every tutorial I needed to know to move to the next level was freely available through either networking groups or online resources, you know. I think that's really the step to just start reading, watching. I mean, you have the advantage of a lot of YouTube videos, a lot of YouTube explanations, and then get an idea of how you fit. I mean, I'm a media person, so I'm not necessarily a person that's going to be a developer in the blockchain space, but, you know, I understand my role is to try to break things down in the simplest form so that the layperson can understand what's going on. But if you're coming at it from an attorney angle, you may have a different take. You know, you may be looking into, you know, how different businesses can integrate, how they can be compliant with the SEC, or you know, in the case of a lot of the top American companies now, a lot of them are considering leaving the country because they're not agreeing with, you know, the regulations that may or may not be pending. There's too much confusion in terms of how cryptocurrencies are viewed. So they're going to need attorneys to figure out, okay, how do I set up in another country? So your vantage point of
how you participate really depends on your background. You know, are you an accountant? Are you an attorney? Are you a marketer? I mean, you know, what are you and how do you see yourself in the space? Because I think it needs all angles of people at this point.
Yeah, and as a layperson, I want to thank you for offering up this explanation because it can be totally overwhelming for anyone who's not thoroughly entrenched in this technology. There's so many facets, so many nuances that even your questions, Jason, have exposed, you know, some of the nuances in the technology and what's going on and just the climate altogether. So thanks so much for explaining that, Deidre.
You're welcome. I think one of the things I didn't answer was how do cryptocurrencies get their value? Because another misconception is that people who are new, you know, really feel that, oh, well, it doesn't have any value. It needs to be backed by gold or it needs to be backed by another a government-issued fiat. You know, the value is the blockchain itself. Our traditional banking system, no matter how much they boo-hoo what has transpired and what is transpiring, they are also moving their back ends to use blockchain. So the same thing that they are boo-hooing, they are integrating, and they will present back to you under their brand and have you pay the exact same fees you've always paid with banking, but they'll be using the technology. So the value is like just like with anything, you know, why does a certain pair of sneakers that are issued cost what it does? Why do different sneakers cost different amounts of money? It depends on the demand. So what makes Bitcoin valuable in terms of the African countries, in terms of the Caribbean, and even in terms of especially Southeast Asia, but Asia in general, is we've, you know, outside of Western Europe, and this includes Eastern Europe too, out of the loop, outside of Western Europe, we've all been colonized by the central banking system. You have a situation in the Caribbean that if a business owner is trying in Trinidad and Tobago is trying to do business with someone in Jamaica, they cannot do that unless they go to a bank that's owned either by the United States, Canada, or Western Europe. And because of that kind of yoke that's been placed on nation-to-nation businesses and areas of people of color, whether it's Africa, the Caribbean, or Asia, they're turning now to cryptocurrencies. Because these cryptocurrencies can be liquidated back to either U.S. or Euro fiat. So if I'm having an issue with a bank that claims that I'm a money launderer, and they do that without any due process, and they've been doing that, and they've been freezing accounts of people who have legitimate businesses, and then, oops, a couple of months later, oh, you can go back to doing business. We didn't find any wrongdoing, but you just crippled them for 3-4 months. So now those different people in different nations are turning towards blockchain cryptocurrencies to transact and to be able to do nation-to-nation businesses. And I found out that through one of my interviews with a Nigerian named Tim Akimbo, who was the first Bitcoin node operator in West, and actually all of Africa, but he certainly was the first in West Africa. And since he was an early adopter, one of the problems he was having was that he and his friends used to rent they were in Nigeria. They lived in Nigeria, but they would rent a summer home in Ghana. But the Ghanaian homeowner was in the UK. So every year there was a drama in terms of whether the bank fees would change, whether it was actually sent, whether it was lost, you know, and that's par for a course in terms of African nations and dealing with central banking systems or even Western Union and other money transfer services. So one year he just said to him, look, can I send you the payment in PayPal? The homeowner didn't know what that was. And he said, you know, it's not a problem. I'll have a fellow Nigerian with you. I'll send him. He wants the Bitcoin. I'll send him the Bitcoin and he'll hand over the actual funds in fiat. And he said the transaction took place in 5 minutes. So you have now a situation in which remittance issues are being solved for various African and Caribbean nations by turning to blockchain-based cryptocurrencies. And you also have the drive and the change and the adoption in terms of getting people to become developers going at a faster rate than even the United States, because for anything, black people in this country, we have a tendency to be comfortable. We're okay with, you know, we're only sending money from, you know, New York to California, the continental. A lot of us, unless we have family in the Caribbean, are not sending money overseas. So we're not hampered by all these kind of injustices that have occurred for hundreds of years. And we're okay with something taking, you know, a bill to clear in 3 days or a transaction to clear in 24 hours. Whereas elsewhere globally in the world, whether it's Africa, the Caribbean, or Asia, or even Eastern Europe, they're like, wow, I can circumvent this and have it done in minutes. So they're flocking to it like wildfire. So we need to be aware of the value of Bitcoin and all the blockchain cryptocurrencies and kind of resolving this ongoing, basically, economic colonialization that had been transpiring. So, you know, the traditional banking center will defend itself, and the right way for them to defend themselves is really to adopt blockchain measures, not just privatized of their own, but actually adopt some of these cryptocurrencies as agreed upon platform for them to use and just have them put in some masternode mining computers of their own so they can take advantage of the fees that could possibly earn, because they do have the money to kind of buy a whole bunch of them and then just kind of move with the times, because the cheese has already moved. So since the cheese has already moved, they, you know, really need to get up to speed in order to survive. I don't think they're going to be able to regulate the world in terms of what they've already discovered that they can do.
So I do have a question about you said the cheese has been moved, and so a while ago you mentioned about possibly governments could centralize some of the blockchain, and that, you know, they're of course putting in measures to decentralize it. But what are the risks of that actually occurring to, say, further hamper African nations and black countries that depend on, you know, transferring currency freely? So, you know, what are the risks of these governments, you know, tightening this and centralizing?
It's a possibility that, you know, as much as possible, they'll try to force or centralize certain cryptocurrencies. But I think the everyday business person will just switch coins. There's nothing. They all work. I mean, not all of them work, but all the prominent ones work. So, I mean, you already have a case scenario, really, honestly, with that most of the early developers in crypto, they don't even use Bitcoin. So there's no reason why anyone would have to stay specifically with Bitcoin, but because you can use others, that there are a few others that liquidate. Litecoin liquidates directly to fiat. I believe Ether does as well. So between those three, and in some cases Dash may also, you just switch cryptocurrencies. So I don't understand how they could centralize them all.
Okay. Yeah. You know, as a lay person, I'm it's kind of hard to wrap my head around the fact that there are different heights of coin in this whole scheme of things. So would it kind of relate to, or would it be compared to, let's say, Canadian coin and American coin, or is it just totally opposite, you know, how they have different denominations?
That's a good analogy. It's just like having a currency of a different country, because one dash is not the same value as one Bitcoin. One Bitcoin has, you know, far greater U.S. to Bitcoin value. However, you'll just get the value of Dash that equates to what you bought with Bitcoin. So it's like going from one country to another country. If I'm, you know, in the United States and I have, you know, a dollar, it's a dollar. But if I go to Trinidad, I have six of their dollars. So it's going to switch depending on the other cryptocurrency are not of the same value as Bitcoin, but you just get more of them. And it's the value, it still equates to the fluctuations as it relates to the U.S. dollar. So it's like dealing with other countries. And the values are always pretty much the same. They're based on how many people are using the system. So if, you know, a certain country is forbidden from using Bitcoin and all of a sudden they switch to Monero, Monero's value is going to go up. And if they have to switch again to something else, then that's going to go up. But they're going to, there's nothing to stop them really from switching from one cryptocurrency to another. That's why you have companies like IBM that are actually building systems for the logistics industry, and they support multiple cryptocurrencies because not everyone's going to want to send with Bitcoin. But if they want to, they can. If they don't, they want to use another one, they can use another one. I mean, a lot of times they're building these type of communities for businesses to transact with their usual vendors or the international vendors, and they have more than one cryptocurrency from which to choose from. They don't have one. They can have five or six, and there may be reasons for that. You know, maybe there's a specific government that says they can't use Bitcoin. Oh, but they're just still going to use business because they'll just send it with Ethereum or something.
So what what in the few minutes that we have now, what is it that blacks can do to participate in this blockchain? You know, what simple methods can we do step by step so that we can at least dip our toe in this pool? Because, you know, it is a little bit overwhelming, but we can't deny that this is happening, this is here, and it's here to stay, and the rest of the world has jumped on board. So as black people, what can we do to begin to participate?
First thing that's paramount is to take the education in your own hands. Don't sit there waiting for the degree to appear. That would be too late. The certification to appear, that would be too great. You have to realize that Google works for you. Start searching basic questions and start teaching yourself and start talking with your friends and going out for coffee. We're going to have an hour in which we talk about this stuff and we'll see if we can find answers as a group, collaborative. I used to be a teacher, so, you know, collaborative group works. Actually works a lot faster than you can imagine. So the education is key, and you have to do that upon yourself. Another thing is to be aware of the black companies in this space. We are not invisible. Right now there is a divide that is the same divide that I saw in the early days of the .com. We had technologists in the early days of the .com that were key and instrumental in everything we do now. You had Emmett McHenry, who was responsible for us to have .com names instead of IP addresses. When it was time for him to sell network solutions, he had to sell it to white people. There were no black wealthy people in the space knowledgeable enough to buy network solutions from him and to leverage it to the next level. The first search engine was created by Alan Imtiaz. He's half white and half Bayesian and lives in Canada. All the other search engines that we use now are based on what he created. And yet he's living in Canada. I'm sure he's living his best life, but he's a photographer. Somebody should have nabbed him up, and he should have been a CEO, and he should have been a household name. You had John Henry Thompson, not to be confused with semantics, John Thompson, who was head of the security, but John Henry Thompson, who worked for Macromedia, created the Lingo language that makes computerized video possible. There's no way, I don't understand to this day why he was not a founder of a competitor or something like YouTube, because YouTube does not happen without him. We have the same thing again repeating in the black blockchain and cryptocurrency spaces. There are black entrepreneurs, tech heads, that have viable, demonstrable blockchain solutions, and they are not getting funded by the wealthy white community, and the black wealthy community is not even looking. I mean, they'll come up with their own imagination, and they will go to Finland and have a European team develop their product. That cannot continue to happen. There has to be a bridge in which the wealth within the black community is looking towards black developers first. Black developers, one of the things that came out of the Blockchain Summit in D.C. in September were the Africans were saying that they've had three major blockchain summits throughout Africa. I know there was a previous one in Uganda. I'm not sure. I think there was one in Nigeria and another one in Kenya. And all those three things in which they had investors come and listen to different business proposals, at each of those three conferences, white people won the, with a B, billions of dollars to create solutions for Africans, even though the vast majority of the attendees and the vast majority of pitchers were indigenous Africans. And by indigenous Africans, I only always mean black people. That's it. So you have a situation that on the African continent, Africans, the intellectual Africans are being ignored and considered incapable by the white elite who are coming in to, quote unquote, invest in Africa. It's really Scramble of Africa Part 2, that they're not getting funded. And as long as we have entertainers like Akon and Praz, and we do see them coming out, but you're coming out and your brand is being connected with all white firms, that does not help. It does not help when you have people like Eduardo Jackson that has a demonstrator with Cinnamon Draft, or you have Sarita Hines, who has just, and kudos to Sarita, she has just partnered with a tech fund to bring her venture, TrustaBit, which is the airline solution, customer service blockchain, to the next level. You know, it's a white partner. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. You got to get your thing out there.
Yeah.
We cannot, as black developers in the space, we can't sit around and wait until our stuff like crumbles and falls apart. We have to find the partners where we can find them. It's hard for us to find white partners as it is, because they're not looking to us first, but it's also hard and very painful to the fact that, you know, the black people of means don't even have us on the radar, or if they do come up with something, they're coming up to something independent of the black geekdom, and the black geekdom
all
is
right.
International. You cannot continue to do that and expect the
Thank
community
you
to
so
improve.
Much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Deidre. Yes, our time is up. I want to thank you so much for being a wonderful guest here on Beyond Talk with Faith McKinney and Jason Moore. Deidre, you're a wealth of information. How can people get in touch with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn at Deidre Ramsey McIntyre. I don't generally change my name. You can inbox me on Quora. I'm still Deidre McIntyre, I think, on Quora, and I'm Deidre Ramsey McIntyre on Facebook. Those are the easiest ways. You know, I don't always check my other boxes, but when I do switch over. You know, I don't change my name, so it's kind of easy to find me.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jason Moore. On behalf of Beyond Talk, podcast is produced by Jacqueline Taylor Adams on Master Griot, NVBTA Radio, and syndicated on demand on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, and Blog Talk Radio, and more. I'm Faith Moore McKinney, along with Jason Moore. We will see you on the second Wednesday at 8 p.m. right here. Be sure to call in. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week. Forgiveness and reach the goal that was